Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Can you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the dealio? Permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans studio. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Coming up this hour, which high seed in March Madness has the biggest choke potential? We'll do that coming up here in about 18 minutes from now. Also later on in the hour, Alliance Primetime! Your best coverage of the AAF, which now has Johnny Manziel coming to the Memphis Express, will come your way at 40 minutes past the hour. We just played that audio from Walt Frazier of the MSG Network, former Knick legend and Basketball Hall of Famer, tearing into LeBron, saying that it shows he doesn't care. It's a bad look that LeBron was seated a couple of seats down from the closest teammate during a timeout yesterday during a loss, in a loss, to the New York Knicks. Thomas tweets, DA, LeBron doesn't care about this season because at this point the Lakers are not making the playoffs. His actions are showing, in my opinion. I think out of all of the years LeBron has been at the top, this has been the worst. It's the worst look for him. At this point this year, with LeBron James, the Lakers have the same exact record as they had last year at this point in time without LeBron James. In other words, adding LeBron didn't make the Lakers better by even a game at this point in the season. Now, we know he missed time this year, so that's a big part of it. But the Lakers are collapsing. He had a terrible fourth quarter yesterday. Added a final shot blocked by Mario Hezonja of the Knicks. These are ugly times. In the middle of getting beaten by one of the worst teams in basketball that are trying to lose games and having a terrible fourth quarter and having his final shot blocked, he is also seated three seats down from his closest teammate. This has been a bad season optics-wise for LeBron. He was unable to elevate the team. He openly pined for Anthony Davis. That was considered tampering. The Lakers were probably trolled by the Pelicans because of the tampering. LeBron has seemingly been out of sync with Luke Walton. Rajon Rondo has looked like he has quit on the season. The young players might have distanced themselves from LeBron or vice versa. And in the middle of losing streaks, he has announced Space Jam 2. He sits the Warriors game, and the night before we find out, he was producing an album with 2 Chainz. It's just been a bad optics season for LeBron. The whole thing's been bad. The whole thing. But I will say that I'm not ready to say that just because he's sitting a couple of seats down during a timeout, suddenly he's a terrible leader, a terrible teammate, doesn't care. That's a really big stretch for me. But it's been just a bad season all around for LeBron because it has felt all along like he is now emotionally checked out. And maybe he is. Because the team is so bad, they're out of the playoffs, and it doesn't matter. Maybe he's an official don't care mode. But I did think that yesterday was another chapter of bad optics for LeBron. So Odell Beckham is in Cleveland, and Antonio Brown is in Oakland. Which one of these diva wide receivers is happier?
All right.
They both got their wish, I think. But I know Antonio Brown wanted out of Pittsburgh, and I know that he wanted to play for John Gruden, so I think he got his wish. I think Odell Beckham wants to play with Jarvis Landry and might have felt as though the Giants were cramping his style. And so I think he was going to play with a garbage quarterback and a bad offensive line and a bad team in New York. And so I think he would want to go to a team that right now is potentially the favorites to win their division. I think, although Odell is wired in a way where he desperately wants attention, he really likes the limelight. He wants to be a celebrity. He likes the Hollywood, Sixth Avenue, Madison Avenue fashion thing. So New York gives him that and Cleveland does not. But I assume they're both kind of happy. But who's happier? I think AB. I think AB because AB got what he wanted. I think AB probably is happier because Antonio Brown set out to get a new contract and did it. He did it by being a petulant child. He did it by firebombing everything in Pittsburgh. He did it by being a wrecking ball to that locker room and the franchise, but he did it. But I got to tell you, I think Antonio Brown's come off looking like a clown, and so much of this is so artificial. He is a wonderful talent. He is an incredible wide receiver. But every step of the way, Antonio Brown, to me, has come off as very inauthentic. Because from Jump Street, this wasn't really about Ben Roethlisberger, even though that might rub him the wrong way. It wasn't really about the Steelers, though that might rub him the wrong way. This was about getting a new contract. This was about Antonio Brown hitting 30 years old and saying, I need guaranteed money and I need it now. And how do I get it? I am going to throw as many grenades as possible. I'm going to take my food and spread it all over the walls. And I will force my way out of town to someplace that will pay me. And so every step of the way, it was kind of this talking out of both sides of his mouth. I mean, he says all these wonderful things about Pittsburgh and the fans and playing there, the organization. But then also is kicking and screaming to embarrass said organization to get his way out of town. And so he shows up in Oakland. And I'm looking at that video of him showing up at Derek Carr's house. And I'm like, this is so fake. This is so contrived. Because I guarantee you this. Derek Carr misses him on a post pattern in week number 4, and he's wide open, and Derek Carr didn't see him and throws it to the slot and out of bounds, and Antonio Brown's going to throw a fit. And I guarantee you this, by week 10, if Derek Carr has only targeted him 50-some-odd times, and the Raiders have 3 wins, I guarantee you this, Antonio Brown's not going to be a great teammate and a great Raider. I guarantee you this. If things don't go the way Antonio Brown wants, he'll be the first to start griping about his quarterback. Because if he didn't like playing with Ben Roethlisberger, who's going to the Hall of Fame, and just threw for 5,100 yards and a career high in touchdowns last season, he sure as hell's not going to love playing for Derek Carr for very long. If he didn't like playing in Pittsburgh, where they have some of the best facilities in the NFL, he sure as hell isn't going to love playing in a septic dump that is Oakland Coliseum right now. If he doesn't like playing in Pittsburgh, where they've got 6 rings and a never-ending marathon of Hall of Famers walking through their hallways, I don't know how he's going to love playing in Las Vegas, where they don't have a snippet of history. I don't know if he's going to love playing for a coach that is making $100 million over the next couple of years and kind of feels like he's more cartoon than actual coach if he didn't like Mike Tomlin. The whole thing feels so artificial. And by the way, I am not a Raider hater. I love, in fact, the Raiders' history. I love those Raiders teams of the 70s and 80s. But boy, are they chintzy now. Boy, the Raiders organization is so tacky. The Raiders organization is that house on that block during Christmas time that has so many lights, but half of them are broken. And the light-up reindeer outside looks like it hasn't been washed in about 20 years. And the inflatable snowman is like half deflated. And you're just like, oh, God, get it together, guys. They introduce Antonio Brown. And they put up a box behind Antonio Brown with some type of black velvet over top to put the three trophies, Super Bowl trophies, up on top. But it's not even an official Raiders logo, official Raiders drop cloth, official Raiders anything. It's just like somebody grabbed it out of the back storage closet. Throw it over this box. Let's put up the trophies here. It also looked like the trophies did have Christmas lights on them, which I couldn't quite tell from the press conference. But if they did, that's a problem. But maybe that's just a light reflection. And then the middle one is propped up by basically a shoebox. I mean, I don't know who organized. Who had the aesthetics to say, oh, you know what? We're introducing Antonio Brown. Let's put a big box and drop cloth behind him and prop up the trophies this high. But here's the other thing. Those trophies are like 40 years old. I mean, come on. Just, if you want to put up the three trophies, okay. But like, put them next to Antonio Brown. Not in a big box or a shoebox behind him. And get an official Raiders team cloth. Something, please. Something. And when you start propping up your trophies from 40 years ago, it kind of doesn't hold as much effect. Like, should the Chiefs be propping up Super Bowl IV trophy all the time? Be like, that's a long time ago, guys. Okay, win one recently. I'm just like, God, the Raiders are just so gaudy and tacky. Then again, look at the owner's haircut. As for Odell Beckham, I think he'll like going to Cleveland because they'll be competitive, because it's an unbelievable football city, because he's already a demigod there without playing it down. He's playing with a Jarvis Landry. Maybe the swagger of Baker Mayfield's perfect for his swagger. But make no bones about it. Part of this is that the Giants were sick of the headache of Odell Beckham. Part of this was they were just tired of constantly having to worry that he was going to explode. That's part of this. Part of this is buyer beware with Odell. He's an incredible talent, but he can make your life really hard. Now look, the Browns have automatically become exciting, trendy, sexy. And this is not in the reign of the parade of what should be the first really, truly exciting Brown season since the 80s. But let's be perfectly clear here. There's no guarantee this works. You know, Odell is just like AB, and if things are not going well for Odell, suddenly Odell becomes a big problem and a big headache. You've got a first-year head coach. Do you think Odell walks into that locker room and automatically has respect for Freddie Kitchens? I don't. I think he's going to play optimist now because it feels good and he's loved. But man, again, week six, the Browns are suddenly 2-4 or 3-3, and Odell didn't have a touchdown, and Freddie Kitchens' offense doesn't look as good as it should. You can't tell me Odell is going to be the greatest soldier ever. Let's face it, Mraz. I would say at least 60% of this deal for the Giants was just trying to move on from the fear that they had every day that Odell was going to say stupid stuff like, I don't want to be here. I don't like the quarterback. The coach is a bum. I'm not happy in New York. I mean, I think they were on edge every day of the last 3 years worrying that Odell was going to embarrass them.
Yeah, and I would even go as far as to say that what happened with Antonio Brown and then seeing the return on it may have also forced the Giants' hand that, oh no, do we want to be them in a year? If we go through another year of Eli stinking, do we want to be Antonio Brown forcing his way out? We only get a 3 and a 5 for this guy?
It could have been the writing on the wall that this time next year, Odell would have done Antonio Brown and just shot his way out of town by being a total hard-to-control pain in the ass.
Yeah, so let's get out of the pain in the ass now. That's the only thing that conceivably makes sense to me. But, yeah, so now, you know, deal with it. The only good thing going for Odell, his best friend that he loves so much from LSU is sitting there with Jarvis Landry. So we'll see.
Are you picking the Browns to win the AFC North?
No, and I promise you this is not bitterness. I don't think the Browns make the playoffs this year. I think this will be the team everybody jumps on, high expectations.
Which is weird because you like the Raiders a lot this year.
I do. But not a lot of people are picking the Raiders. I just think you're going to get to the point where I don't think Freddie Kitchens is going to be ready for what's coming his way head coaching-wise here. A year ago, the guy wasn't even a coordinator. That's going to be a lot of things to handle when Kareem Hunt comes back. That's going to be another distraction to handle. I don't love their defense still. I think they got worse on defense. They don't have a first-round pick now. I don't know. I have a feeling this is going to be the team. Everybody gets on their train, and they're like 8-8 and just miss out.
Well, I'll tell you, when I hear that expectations should be 12-4, and you've got people around the NFL saying they're now a Super Bowl contender, like Dan Orlovsky said, they're a legit Super Bowl contender. I'm like, whoa. Wow, look, let's let them make the playoffs first before we put them in the Super Bowl.
We have no idea how they could handle a playoff game, how Baker Mayfield could get it. You don't know this. By the way, to put them in the Super Bowl, they're going to go beat the Pats in Foxborough now?
Well, beyond even that, you're going to put them with 2 to 3 playoff wins already? Playoff wins are hard enough. They haven't made the playoffs. You know, it's fun to say in March, oh, man, they're a Super Bowl contender. They've got a lot of talent. And they do. But it is a monster jump to go from 0-16 to 7-8-1 to a Super Bowl. That's just too much of a jump to me. Look, could they go 10-6 this year? I think that's their ceiling. I think a year where they go 10-6 and win the division and have a home playoff game wild card weekend, that to me is the ceiling. And that would be an amazing step forward. I am not putting them in the Super Bowl. That to me is going to look so stupid in December.
I know they have a lot more star power than this, but to me, I look at the Browns on paper and they feel like the Tampa Bay Bucks of 2017 where they added DeSean Jackson to go with Mike Evans and Jameis Winston was taking the next step and everybody thought the Bucks now were going to be that team in the NFC to take the step and they totally flamed out and we haven't seen them in the playoffs since and now, you know, Dirk Cutter's gone. And Dirk Cutter couldn't handle that situation. I kind of look at the Browns that same way, where they're going to have the same kind of expectations out of nowhere. People think they're a big-time Super Bowl contender, and they flame out.
The Freddie Kitchens hire is really risky, because now he's got all of these parts and pieces with a lot of strong personalities in a rabid football town, and now with huge expectations. Kitchens has got some fire on him now. When we come back on the show, bracketology, which of the high seeds has the biggest choke potential? Plus, later on in the hour, Alliance primetime at 40 minutes past. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Are the glitch in the simulation.
Everybody was in an uproar. Maybe this guy's thinking, hey, I'm 25 years old. Sorry.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
That's how Pete the Body Bilotti feels today. Coughing, wheezing, hacking. He's lost his voice. Poor guy. Pete the Body playing hurt today. This is his Michael Jordan flu game. Glad you're with us here on the DA Show. Alliance Primetime is coming up here at 40 minutes past the hour. The great Andrew Bogish, a kind sir, is the voice of Alliance Primetime. Mraz will join him for a Berman/Tom Jackson/ESPN retro look at the AAF, complete with the music and singing. It's Alliance Primetime, the best segment we have here on the show, coming your way in about 15 minutes from now. Doing More brought to you by the Home Depot. Next generation home improvement with everything you need to do projects smarter. The Home Depot, more saving, more doing. Taking a look at a player doing more for his team. Matt McQuaid, even the Michigan State senior guard, exploding for 27 points to lead all Spartans in the 65-60 win over in-state rival Michigan in the Big Ten Championship yesterday. 27 points, a career high for McQuaid. Top seed of Michigan State scored the game's final 10 point to capture its first championship since 2016. That brings us to the brackets. And there's a couple of high seeds I have earmarked for early chokes, early losses, early exits. I'll summarize it this way. The team that I give you here as you make out your brackets, they are one, two, or three seeds that I think will lose or have a good chance of losing on the opening weekend. I think that these seeds, top three seeds, have a good chance of losing before the Sweet 16. As for the one seeds, we'll get to those coming up here. But let's start with the threes. I think Texas Tech is very vulnerable. They're a three seed, and Texas Tech will play Northern Kentucky coming up here in the first round, the round of 64, and then the winner of Buffalo against Arizona State, St. John's. Buffalo is very dangerous. Buffalo can play with the big boys. Buffalo went to Syracuse and won this year. They're a six seed for a reason. They're one of the highest seeded MAC teams ever. And Texas Tech lost its first game of the Big 12 tournament. That is always an indicator of a school from a power conference that will not go deep. If you lose your first game in your power conference tournament, write them off. Texas Tech could be an early exit out of the first weekend. From the two seeds, I look at Michigan because I don't like that matchup with Nevada potentially. Michigan as the two could play Nevada in that round of 32. And Nevada, I think, is a very sneaky, very dangerous seven seed. They've got transfers. They had a run last year. They're well coached by Musselman. And they've got, I think, the veteran leadership that it takes to get into the tournament and make noise. I don't like that matchup at all from a 2-7 standpoint for Michigan. A number 2-7 matchup that I hate, Tennessee and Cincinnati from a Tennessee standpoint. I didn't like it all that the Volunteers got smacked around by Auburn yesterday. Did you see this? Tennessee yesterday had 23 points in the first half. I mean, come on. That's a conference championship game. You're a top 10 team. You scored 23 points in the first half. They looked awful. I mean, Auburn just steamrolled and won by 20 points. You know I've been very doubtful of Tennessee all season long. I'm still doubtful. And they could get that Cincinnati team that, again, I think is a dangerous Cincy team. The way that they play, they like to play physical. They've got a tough-nosed mentality. I don't like that matchup for Tennessee in that round of 32. A team that I'm going to have on both sides of the map here. I think Kentucky has Final Four potential, but I think Kentucky has a really tough matchup against Wofford. And that sounds crazy because you hear the name Wofford and say, what's the big deal? But Wofford got a very high seed from the committee from a very small conference for a reason. They were a seven seed out of the SoCon. That almost never happens. But Wofford, they have played all their power conference opponents very tough this year. And the SoCon was extremely difficult for a low major conference. A lot of really good teams, and Wofford was really good in it. And note that they broke into the top 25. We had their head coach on last week. They broke into the top 25, and now we're in the top 20. You hear the name Wofford, you think, oh, that's a 15 or a 16 seed. Oh, they're a low major out of the SoCon. They'll be gone in their first game. They're actually a seven seed and ranked in the top 20. So that matchup for Kentucky in that second game is very difficult. As for the one seed, I think the 1-1 that is vulnerable right now and could have an early exit out of the first weekend is Gonzaga. Why? Twofold. Number one, we know coming out of their conference, they just don't get tested enough. Now, this is not Gonzaga's fault. Their non-conference schedule this year was awesome. And that was part of the reason they were ranked number one for the weeks that they were this year in the season. Mark Few tried to schedule it really tough, and they really rose to the occasion, and you've got to give Gonzaga major credit for their scheduling outside of the conference season. But in the conference season, not only do they not win their conference tournament, that's a big upset, they'll also have to play potentially Syracuse in the round of 32, and Jim Boeheim, over the last 10 years, has been the coach of the team that's a bubble team or a lesser considered team out of a power conference and makes it to the second weekend. Syracuse has been amazing making it to the Sweet 16 and beyond. And that matchup I don't like for Gonzaga at all. I like them much better against Baylor. But Syracuse throws that junky, weird 2-3 zone out there. They beat them a couple of years ago en route to a Final Four. And Gonzaga is going to have played 2 months straight of a conference season and then suddenly get an ACC team that wasn't really a bubble team this year, is better than that, and played with Duke when they were at home, beat Duke on the road, beat Louisville this year as well. Syracuse is this really hot and cold Jekyll and Hyde season, and I think that's a bad matchup for Gonzaga in the round of 32. So my high seeds with potential first weekend flameout, Gonzaga, Tennessee, Kentucky, Michigan, Texas Tech. We'll do complete bracket breakdown coming up next hour with Reed Forgrave, CBSSports.com. But when we come back, it's Alliance Primetime! Woohoo!
Good value, big upside.
Yappy here all day, big boy. Come on, bring it.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Tournament action tips off tomorrow, and CBS Sports Network is ready to bring you in-depth analysis of the field of 68. Take a look at who has a chance to win it all. Don't miss NCAA March Madness Bracket Breakdown tonight at 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific, only on the 24-hour home of CBS Sports.
CBS Sports Spectacular, yeah!
Now, our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Everyone, quick way you could save money switching to Geico. Homeowners, renters, motorcycle insurance too. Get it all, geico.com. We've got Alliance Primetime coming up here on the show in just a few minutes. I, for one, am very excited about the Johnny Manziel addition to the league. I think that the league could use a pop in energy, a pop in juice with a guy like Manziel. Also, this keeps him away from the XFL next year. We know that the two leagues, at least if you're playing in the AAF, have an exclusive contract. You can't go swing over to the XFL now. So I think for the XFL, this is a loss. For the Alliance, it's a win. And I assume Manziel will take over almost immediately as the quarterback of the Memphis Express. Remember, this is one of the worst teams in the Alliance. This is Pete the Body Bilotti's Memphis Express. He has been without a championship for a long time. This was the shot of adrenaline he needed in his sports life. Johnny Manziel, Mike Singletary, a half-empty Legion Field. What could go wrong? Actually, I think Legion Field is in Birmingham. So what could go wrong?
The Liberty Bowl.
The Liberty Bowl. What could go wrong with Johnny Manziel, Beale Street, Mike Singletary, and a half-empty Liberty Bowl? I think it's a match made in heaven. Walking in Memphis with Johnny Manziel's 2 feet on the ground. Walking in Memphis, Pete Bilotti's coming to town. Walking in Memphis, Johnny Manziel is back, baby. I'm very excited about this. We all are. Alliance Primetime coming up in just a few moments. We ended last hour talking about hooves. Why? Because we're the DA show. And Mraz, number one, didn't know that the Denver Broncos were a horse, even though their mascot on the sideline is a horse, even though their old logo had a horse coming through a D, and the current logo is just kind of like a stylistic horse.
Why not just call them the Denver Horses?
He thought it was a bull. And then I said, well, they've got hooves, and you can see the hooves in the old logo. He said, no, bulls don't have hooves. I said, what do you think they have? He said, paws. I said, you're an idiot. Twitter, NASCAR Brian tweets, DA, please shut off Mraz's mic. This is just nauseating.
Do Broncos have hoofs?
Mikey C tweets, this dumbass has a hoof for a brain. Hashtag get them out.
They wear shoes. Those are for hooves.
Those are for hooves.
Those are for hooves.
Sometimes Mraz sounds like Alf doing doing Borscht Belt stand-up comedy in the Catskill.
They wear shoes. Those are for hooves.
Hey, I kill me. Those are for hooves.
Those are for hooves.
Steve tweets, I swear I just laughed out loud from your conversation with Mraz about Broncos being bulls and only horses having hooves. This show is literally the best. Either the best or the worst, Steve. I'm not sure which one to go with. Robert tweets, how could Mraz not know this? You both were here in Boise and you went to a Boise State Broncos game and hung out at the university. Yeah, I know.
I must have missed the time we pet a horse while we were there. I think you called a paw.
Yeah, but think about the Boise State logo. It's a horse. Think about that horse on their helmet.
You're right. I mean, but again, like you called it a stylistic horse.
Yeah.
Kind of has a Bronco feel to it. Like if a Bronco did Weight Watchers.
What does?
I mean, a bull does Weight Watchers.
You think a Bronco looks like bull on Weight Watchers?
Yeah. Like it's mean. It's tough. Horses aren't mean looking. They're pretty.
A Twitter follower by the name of Cat Burp tweets, Mraz has reached a new level of idiot. If you come back to Boise, please leave him at home.
A pig paw, yeah. Like a pig pen, a pig paw.
For hooves.
I was good for the economy there. Those are for hooves.
Very good. Although you ate for free most places.
That's
so maybe
a good
you
point, actually.
William tweets, for God's sake, Mraz, the old Broncos logo shows the horse with hooves. Hashtag get him out.
Do Broncos have hooves?
Dixieland Dan tweets, here's a list of animals with hooves. Horses, bovines, goats, sheep, deer, antelopes, also giraffes. Mraz, come on, man. Next you're going to try to tell us Rocky Mountain oysters don't come from a bull. No, they definitely, yeah, they come from a bull.
Pig is a snout. You know that.
Come from hooves. The best time of the week, Mondays at 10:45 Eastern. It's Mraz. It's Bogish. It's Alliance Primetime.
The DA Show is dusting off the old tapes. We're doing highlights the way it used to be. It's Bogish.
He's lit up. My goodness.
It's Mraz.
And he's in for a Birmingham touchdown.
It's DA.
And it's caught for the touchdown. The Orlando special.
The Philly special, but it's the winter.
It's Alliance Primetime. And it starts now.
Week 6 in the AAF began with one team still unbeaten and tight playoff races in both conferences. Did those Apollos stay perfect? Did those races get tighter than Sean's belt after second breakfast? Let's find out right now. Today's edition of Primetime is brought to you by Manziel Movers. Did you just lose your job in Canada after losing your job in America and now going back to America for a similar job? Then Manziel Movers can lug your crap to your lovely new home in Memphis or anywhere else in the continental United States plus Canada, excluding the Yukon Territory. Something had to give Saturday afternoon in the SLC. The Commanders hosting the Express. Someone was going to get...
No. The Stallions.
Where'd you? Oh, the Stallions hosting the Express.
Yes,
someone
Bogish
was going to get their second win of the season.
Plenty of time. It's over the middle. Wide open.
There's that man.
Nick Truesdale has now caught 15 straight passes. That good for his third touchdown of the season.
Nick, true are you? True, 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 true.
Now it says Stallions in my script. It was 8-0 after their first possession. It was about to get much worse for Memphis.
Bedford under pressure immediately. And who else? Carter Schultz. The Alliance's lead. Sacker has gotten Mettenberger to the ground, and he looks to be hurt, guys.
Official timeout.
Holy Schultz! Down goes Mettenberger. Home of the Mettenberger. May I have your order?
You can order a left ankle brace. That's the injury on the first snap of the afternoon. In came a human named Brandon Silvers from Troy. His brother's name is Chase. Silvers could not lead a rally. That's all they had on the bio online. He could not lead a rally, Shawnee, because nobody
circles the wagons like the Salt Lake Stallions.
Commanders.
Woodrow. Back over the middle. There he is, that man again. This is Anthony Denham this time.
Anthony Denham, well-dressed for the Salt Lake Stallions there late.
The 22-9 final included an AAF single-game record 7 sacks
and I believe 3 touchdown passes from Josh Woodrum.
Yeah, unbelievable job by Solek. And look out for Carter Schultz. Going to be rushing a passer in the NFL come the fall.
Next, we get our answer on those Apollos. They put their 5-0 start up against the Hotshots, who had lost 3 in a row. Why do you look confused, Sean?
Another early Apollos lead.
On third and one, they will go to the air. Corner of the end zone. Touchdown, Apollos. And wouldn't you know, it's Charles Johnson.
Johnson about to be so good, Sean. The Apollos have to trade him to the Browns for next to nobody just to avoid his diva behavior.
Wow, yeah. And after they sign him, they make sure it counts against the cap as well.
Arizona QB John Wolford threw 3 picks in week 5. No such issues on Saturday.
Third and 8. Wolford going to the air. Has a man wide open. And again, walking into the end zone is Jarrell Presley.
Presley ain't nothing but a ground dog. Scoring all the time.
Jarrell Presley just getting started, though. After Orlando took a 17-14 lead early in the fourth, he revived that early season MVP talk on the ground.
Presley in the game. He gets the handoff. And Presley in for the touchdown for Arizona. The Hotshots retake the lead in enemy territory.
How are they feeling in Arizona, Bogish? Hot. Ole, 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 ole.
This one ended on a false start at the Arizona 8 for Garrett Gilbert and company. The 10-second runoff, giving them their first loss of the season. So somewhere, Mercury Morris and the other overimportant 72 Dolphins can have some champagne.
Breath of fresh air if you're Orlando, Bogish. No pressure on the undefeated season.
Now it's Sunday afternoon in Atlanta. Battle of 2-game win streaks. The Legends and the Commanders. Look who's back.
Dangerous. Here's Farrell. Cuts back and cuts up the middle and takes it in. 12 yards on the touchdown run.
Kenneth Mia Farrow into the end zone.
Rumbling, bumbling, stumbling for Mia Farrow.
A quick commanding lead for San Antonio in Atlanta. And the defense kept it rolling.
Third down and long. Murray gets away. Throws and it's intercepted. Intercepted. Taken away by Zach Sanchez.
Mark Sanchez?
Oh, Aaron Murray, why the hurry? Aaron Murray makes you worry.
He threw the ball 41 times yesterday, 30 caught by his teammates, 3 caught by Commanders. The San Antonio pass game much better.
Dead right about that. There's a throw and a catch. It's caught by Mikhail McKay.
Because
every kiss begins with McKay.
Kevin McHale, McKay, the TD catch. Logan Woodside taking the Legends behind the woodshed. A pair of TD passes, a 37-6 rout of those Legends. Finally, Sunday, primetime. All hands on deck in San Diego with Birmingham coming into port. The Fleet and the Iron, both 3-2, but the Iron had dropped their previous 2 boys. This one was awesome, thanks in part to Trent Richardson.
Put a man in motion across the formation. That's Wesley Saunders. They'll hand it to Richardson again. He goes straight up the middle. And Trent Richardson is it. For T-Rich, touchdown.
You know in Birmingham, Bogus, it's feed T-Rich or die trying.
How about the bass and treble with Tom Abraham on the Iron Radio?
Richardson fired up.
Had already scored on a catch and run. Birmingham leading 21-9 at that point, but the Fleet turned starboard and got back in the game.
The DC to Watson. What a grab. Still alive. Dives to the end zone. Touchdown. He was not touched when he went to the ground.
Turned down for what? Sin. Turned down for what? Sin.
Terrell Watson from Mike Bercovici. San Diego into the lead in the third. Birmingham retook that lead in the fourth. Then they were even. Then Nick Novak was on the field.
From right between the hashes. 44 for the win. The snap is good. The hold is good. The kick is good.
Oh, the Fleet are now a wrinkle in time after the iron roll over them.
32-29 the win for Birmingham at SDCCUCCCU Stadium in San Diego. That's week 6. Here's DA.
You ain't nothing but a ground dog crying all the time. So here is some of the big news and notes of the weekend, guys. You know, league executives
really crowing this morning about the Hot Shots win over the Orlando Apollos. There was some growing concern that perhaps Orlando was unbeatable. The Hot Shots beating Orlando in this game on the road really helped league executives take a breath, a sigh of relief. Okay, we can breathe easily. There's not one dominant team that will win the next 10 championships. Some concern that perhaps the Apollos were the Golden State Warriors of the AAF early.
Shows you it's a week-to-week league, Damon, a week-to-week league.
The other big story from the weekend is that rumors that the AAF sent Manziel to Memphis to save the Express, that the Express right now really hurting in attendance-wise. Obviously, Christian Hackenberg, a disaster. That perhaps there was a wink-wink, nudge-nudge that the Commanders, who had territorial rights over him in Texas, that the league, which is kind of a league-owned entity,
right,
said, Commanders, say no, so we can shift him to the next spot on the waiver wire, which was the Express. Maybe that'll juice him up to save spring football in Memphis. So league rumors abounding around the league that perhaps there was some collusion to get him to Memphis.
Yeah, Memphis flexed earlier in the week to a game on CBS primetime TV later in the year. Don't tell me this wasn't ahead of knowing that Manziel would end up there.
So Manziel will now play on national TV.
The last week of the season, the game will be on CBS, and that was decided before Manziel signed there.
Assuming he's going to shrink himself out of the league by then.
Could be possible. Only a month to go, but St. Paddy's has passed. Can they unflex in the AAF?
That's the Lions primetime. You can always catch that on YouTube as well after the show. YouTube for all of your Lions primetimes.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. Audacy. Download it today.